Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Bale going around and scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Welcome to another all-new, all-dangerous edition of the brand new Wheeler Dealer Radio. I am Skipjack, your host, and we're mixing it up a little bit today. We don't have Lennon's eyebrow. He's busy puking in an alley or whatever they do in Atlanta on St. Patrick's Day. So I'm joined by clean, upright Uncle Meadows straight from the moderator section of the site.
Oh, Meadow, what's up, guys?
Oh, Meadow, welcome back to Wheeler Dealer Radio.
Sorry, I jumped the gun there. Hey, how you doing? I'm doing well. I've got a cat on my lap. I've got Bushmills in my glass. Yeah, happy St. Patrick's Day. And I'm ready to get going here. Good to be back with you.
Awesome, awesome. We're already rotating people on the site, but we are maintaining our strict no Brian's rule, so I'm still happy about that. Okay, so Sunday kind of sucked. During the game at one point, as we lost to Arsenal, I think at about the 70th minute, as it was sort of becoming clear how that game was going to end, I posed the question, which I would like to pose to you now, which would have been worse, losing the way we did or getting stomped 5-2?
Boy, that's tough because, you know, neither one of them is good. But at a certain level, I'm kind of of the opinion that, when you lose, when you're playing well, that's just the absolute worst. That's one thing to get absolutely stomped. I mean, we've been on the end of that a couple of times this season. We've been on the end of 5-6-0 beatings, and that doesn't feel good. But the thing about this game that's just really, oh man, it was just killer, was the fact that we thoroughly outplayed Arsenal for, you know, most of the second half, entire second half. And, you know, even for the most of the game, they had played really well early on, and then we kind of got our legs under us, and we did well, and we did really well. It was one of the best games I've seen us play in months. And so then to really have what's considered your best game and to go out and have chances that you couldn't convert and to end up losing 1-0, it's killer. And I'm not quite willing to say that it's – at the time, I think I said that it was worse than losing 5-0. But, you know, I'm going to backtrack a little bit and say maybe not worse, but it certainly didn't feel good.
Yeah, I'm probably with you there. I think the only advantage of a 5-2 loss is you just turn your TV off in frustration earlier. I think what was particularly galling about this game, and correct me if I'm wrong, Arsenal were really good for about the first 5 minutes, and of course they had that like crazy wonder goal from Rosicky, which is, boy, I hate him. I feel like he only turns up against us, which is, I guess, the only way it could be worse if it was Bednar doing that to us every time we played them. But
oh God,
maybe it's some sort of karmic retribution for Bentley's like goal from the halfway line a few years ago. But anyway, aside from that goal, I don't think they had a good shot on target until near the end of the game when Lloris made like a crazy save. They had two or three breakaways where they probably should have scored, but I know Ox was trying to revive the British space program on one of them, and I think they just failed to put it on target the other time. Certainly after the 30-minute mark, I think they only had one good chance for the rest of the game. I would say Spurs completely dominated that game after the 30-minute mark. We looked good. We were moving the ball. We were creating even like early on, we were dominating possession. We weren't really cutting them open. And while we were never able to quite literally get past Koscielny and I'm blanking on who the other center back was.
Oh, Mertesacker. No, big fucking German.
Didn't he come in as a sub, or am I mixing him up with someone else?
Anyway. I missed most of the first half of the game, so I had to go back and watch it later. Well, he was in there for a good part of the second half, at least.
We were never able to really get through the center backs, but even that, like, our inability to sort of penetrate the middle, which is in our first game against Arsenal, we just sort of toothlessly moved it around the sides of the field, and we never really got in the center except for, like, one Defoe shot. We were actually, like, moving the ball in the middle and, like, eventually, and getting some decent chances, Chadley's in particular, which admittedly came off a fumbled handling of Kenny Chesney. But even then, like, we were dangerous. We were attacking. Adebayor almost had two goals off of set pieces or crosses. I mean, we were looking really good, and it was between bad luck and just good defending. We couldn't stick it in, and it was incredibly frustrating.
Oh, absolutely, it was frustrating. I mean, and first, as loath as I am to give Arsenal any kind of a credit, they Rosicki's shot at the beginning there was an absolute blinder. I mean, it was just a beautiful ball.
Angle he hit that on was stupid. I mean,
it was ridiculous. I mean, it was the kind of shot where you go, holy shit, but man, was that a great shot.
Well, and I remember watching it. I was watching when we had the ball at the other end of the field, and I think I want to say it was Sandro. But if you go back and watch that play, there's some Spurs player scurrying free on the left, completely unmarked. And I think Sandro just didn't see him because he passes over and loses the ball, and it ended up leading to the goal. But right. I was just like, oh, of course they're going to score there.
Well, you know, and this goes back actually. Okay, so beginning of the game, I just got – okay, and I was going to mock me for this, but I'm going to tell the story anyway. So I just got out of church right at the beginning of the game, and there's like in my building, there's one corner where I can actually get an open Wi-Fi signal. So right after we get out, I beeline over that corner. People actually call it, you know, my antisocial corner, because that's kind of where I go to check sports games whenever, every time Spurs play on a Sunday. So I log on, like I just get an alert. The game had just started, so I immediately jump on Twitter and say, "Hey, game just started. Are we losing yet?" And I swear to God, I had no idea that Arsenal had just scored. So according to my Twitter feed, it was a complete meltdown. People either thought one of two things. Either one, they thought I was completely taking the piss and was just, you know, trolling everybody.
That's my job on the site, everyone.
Exactly. So that's not me. And the other one, the other half of my timeline actually thought I caused it, some kind of karmic retribution.
That I
so,
can believe.
No, it was complete... Honest to God, it was like nothing. I had no idea. But that's you know, a little bit beyond the pale. No, I mean that Arsenal did two things really well in this game. They had that the opening 5 minutes where they had that moment of brilliance from Rosicki, which was just an amazing shot again. And then their central defense pairing was just a wall. We just could not get
literally,
past them.
Literally. It was a wall. Chadley could not shoot a ball past them.
You know, and we had chances. I mean, Chadley had a few chances. You know, there were others that just – they would get the ball in the box, have an open look, and then there would just be like a Mertesacker leg in the way. And it just pinged or a – you know, they would get on the end of it with a header. And we just could not get past them. And it was incredibly frustrating to watch because, you know, especially after watching Spurs dominate possession and really control the midfield. You know, Chadley had, I think, one of his best games that we've seen him play for us since he joined. Just really, I thought, made the case that he's, you know, he can stay and he can play and he needs to maybe stay with the team. Before that, I'm thinking, you know, I'm not sure what we do with this guy. He's just not making it happen. But I thought he played really well. So, you know, just, gosh, it was so brutal.
Would you call his performance Soldado-esque? Great, you know, everything, but putting the ball in the net.
Yeah, he was almost playing like, you know, he was playing almost as a withdrawn striker.
In the center of the midfield, which is an interesting decision when you have Christian Eriksen on your team, but...
Yeah, and Soldado, for that matter. I mean, I was actually, toward the end, I could see Chadley was starting to tire midway through the second half. So around the 55th minute, I was actually screaming for Soldado to come on because that's where he excels. You know, he can drop down a little bit deeper and really bring people into play really effectively well, even if he doesn't, you know, isn't putting the ball in the back of the net. That's his role. He can really do that. Well, so I was puzzled by the fact that he didn't see a whole lot more action. I really thought he could have been the difference maker for us.
Well, we're going to talk about the substitutions in a second. But before we get to Tim Sherwood's tactical nous, let's talk about some of the good things in the game, namely the performances. I was really impressed by Chadley, like we just talked about. Townsend looked great to me. I think... Like, that game did a lot to sell me on it, because as bad as Arsenal have been, and if I was an Arsenal fan, I wouldn't be too thrilled about how he looked going forward. Townsend looked great. His passing was good. He had his head up for once. He took one or two dumb shots, but he wasn't taking a lot of them. I thought his runs through the midfield were awesome. He was dribbling through tons of guys, not just into cul-de-sacs like he usually does. I was really impressed by Townsend. Adebayor put in a shift, even if he was slightly more anonymous than I would have liked. I thought, like, this game, we talked about this in the writer's room. This game did a lot to convince me that the management is the problem and not the players, or at least not most of the players. Like, a decent manager starting in the summer could get something out of these guys with a couple tweaks, probably mostly in defense. But yeah. I was really impressed by sort of how they performed, especially considering the two games they were just coming off of, and Sherwood's, you know, calling them out and throwing them under the bus and all that. And they played really well. They did a really good job. They should have beaten Arsenal on the weekend.
No, agreed. I think Spurs showed a lot of gut and character.
A lot of character. There it is. Character. Character.
They showed a heck of a lot of character. We'll talk a little bit more about this a little bit later on. But first, let's get back to performances. I thought Chadley, as we said before, played remarkably well. And you could see him. He was tiring out toward the end. I never really liked to see him in that kind of withdrawn striker position, because he was never really that effective before. But for whatever reason, this time he was finding space. He was getting into dangerous positions. He was getting his shot, even though, you know, obviously it never connected. He was getting dangerous balls, and he was getting the balls toward the net. So I thought that was really great. Townsend as well was fantastic. He had gobs of pace. He provided that width that we've been kind of desperately lacking for the past few games. I start to wonder a little bit after watching him struggle the last few times he's been in, if whether or not the struggles were more of him just kind of getting back up to the fitness, the full fitness. And once he's back in, and had a game where he was 100%, and against, you know, Arsenal, big rivals, that, you know, he played well. He played really, really well, and he showed glimpses of a kind of player that he could become in future years. And I think he could be really, he has that potential to really put together and be a star. Another player I thought played pretty well was Eriksen. I thought he was kind of the creative engine that we needed. It wasn't a standout performance by him, but I thought he did well. He was getting into areas where I thought he needed to get to. It wasn't his best performance, but I thought he was the catalyst. That was a little disappointing to see him come off that early.
I would disagree with you about Eriksen. I thought he was pretty anonymous for the game. Now, that might not be his fault, because, I mean, I don't know why you're playing him on the left like that when you could be putting him in the center. I mean, if Chadley's healthy, like, why is he not playing on the left? I mean, it worked. I don't want to be take too much out of Chadley there. But I just thought Eriksen was pretty anonymous. I do think he came off when he needed to. He looked really tired when they pulled him off. I'm not sure why you would put Sigurdsson in for him, which seems a little too much like a FIFA substitution to me. And it's also like, let's take one guy who's playing out of position out of the game and put in another guy who could play out of position. Like, I know AVB kept starting him on the wing, but Sigurdsson's not really a winger.
It's continuing the trend that AVB started and that sure we continue to playing guys on the wing who, especially in the left wing, who like to cut in a lot. And if that's the game, if that's what they were trying to go for, then, you know, maybe Sigurdsson's the right choice there. I don't know. But I don't know.
I thought that killed a lot of our attack towards the end. Eriksen looked
a little bit more toothless after that substitution that we had before. And when you have a guy who's as class as Eriksen, and obviously he was tired. He probably needed to come off. But when he's your guy, he's, you know, one of the best players on the team, I think you make an argument that you say to him, you know, get out there, make something happen, stay on. Unless he's, you know, injured or it's an injury might be imminent. It was a curious substitution.
I mean, I think he's been hurt, or at least something's been up with Eriksen lately. I don't think Sherwood has a daughter for him to be sleeping with, so I'm going to assume it's a health issue.
Obviously, Bentaleb is sleeping with Sherwood's daughter.
Oh,
right?
You must really like Bentaleb then. I don't know any father who would like his daughter's boyfriend that much, that she would keep dating him that long, but...
Well, speaking of Bentaleb, I thought he played.
Let's talk about Bentaleb.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Bentaleb had – sorry, that was my cat coming on the screen there. I thought Bentaleb had a – you know, he had a good shift. And the more I see him play, the more that I really think he could be a really key player for us in the future. The thing about Bentaleb, he's making mistakes, which I think is fine. You know, when you're 19 and, you know, 3 months ago you were in the youth team, coming into the first team at Spurs is – you know, it's daunting. And I think he's comported himself pretty well. He's had a couple of really bad games, of course, and he's not always going to make the right decision. But what he needs right now is he needs minutes, and he's getting those minutes. I think he could develop into a really good player for us.
I appreciate Bentaleb because he's kind of a litmus test for my timeline of who's intelligent and who's a mouth-breathing, you know, hashtagging moron. Because I thought he was early on. Spurs were like dangerous when they got it in the final third, but they weren't linking play effectively. He was the guy who started linking that play, and he wasn't like making those sexy through balls that were splitting open their defense. But what he was doing was neatly retaining possession against Arsenal's midfield. There were a couple like really tight triangles, like on one side of the field or the other, where he was keeping the ball and distributing it and making sure it didn't get out of Spurs' possession when there were Arsenal players all over them. And I thought he did a really nice job of that. He had a couple dumb mistakes, but he's 19 years old and just got thrown in the first team like 3 months ago, so I'm not going to be too harsh on him. I think Spurs fans' reactions to him are kind of curious. I've said this before, and I'll keep saying it. If Liverpool had a player this good, they'd be photoshopping him into, like, European Cup celebrations from the 80s. Like, they would love this guy because they're spazzes about this kind of thing.
No, agreed. Agreed. I mean, the thing about Bentaleb is that he was not the player from the youth team that we all thought would be cracking the first team at this point. I mean, we all thought, you know, they'd be Tom Carroll, who'd be – yeah, I know. Keep talking. But I mean, if you would have asked me who's the guy in the youth team that you think is going to crack the first team, it would not have been Nabil Bentaleb. It would have been, you know, Tom Pritchard or Tom Carroll. You know, Townsend, of course, because he had already cracked that team by that point. But Bentaleb was – when he came on that first time, I was shocked.
I barely knew who he was, yeah.
Yeah. Because he was not the player that had a whole lot of promise. I don't even remember this past summer. I know that, you know, the site did a ranking of our youth prospects. I don't even remember where he came, but it wasn't that high. He was definitely on. I think he was even top 10, but he was not the guy who I would have thought that, you know, would have ended up not only cracking the first team, you know, but also starting and, you know, playing some really pretty good ball for Tottenham Hotspur, especially in the absence of Sandro. So, I mean, with all that said, yeah, the thing he needs right now, now that he's done this and he's cracked the team, he's proven he's a decent Premier League midfielder, and he's proven that he can hold his own out there. What he needs now is more minutes, and I think the more he plays, the better he's going to get.
I agree.
I think he's a solid prospect.
Sherwood clearly, I think it's clear to me that Sherwood brought him in because he wanted someone who could distribute the ball better in the midfield. With Sandro out, I think he hoped he could sort of recycle it as sort of a holding or defensive midfielder. I don't think he does the things a defensive midfielder needs to do terribly well. I think he's good at safe circulation. I think that would have been Carroll if Carroll was still here. But I think he liked Bentaleb enough that he was like, okay, you're going to get your minutes. And I think he's good. And I think next year, given that those kind of players cost a lot of money, as we saw with the Moutinho and Modric sagas, I doubt we'll go out and buy one of them regardless of who's our manager. So my guess would be that Carroll and Bentaleb will be fighting for a don't get loaned out spot next year. Which I'm fine with. I think that's not a bad situation, because when Carroll fails and I'm proven right, we'll have Bentaleb to fall back on. No, but in all honesty, it's good to have these players. And I thought Bentaleb played much better when he was allowed to sort of push forward and Sandro was allowed to sort of play more of a defensive role. So, you know, I'm liking Bentaleb. I hope we see him more in that kind of role as the season goes on. But we'll see. I was impressed.
Yeah, I was too. I mean, I think the thing about Bentaleb that he's really shown improvement on the most was just his composure. You know, when you see him out there, when you saw him out there in the early games, he looked really at times out of his depth. He had that one really, really good game early on. And then for a while there, he just looked completely lost and was just getting overrun. But, you know, he's kind of settling in now, and he's showing a little bit more composure on the ball, and he's not looking as spooked as he did against, you know, against Manchester City. Where he just got absolutely torn apart. So I'm happy where he is at this moment. I know the Spurs fan base is kind of split on him and his ability. I don't think it's warranted. I mean, I think he's going to be he's a player that most teams would really want to have on their team. I think he'd be the kind of guy who, if we had a better midfield, or one that was less injured, he would have been a fine candidate to go on loan to a lower side Premier League club, and I think he would have done very well.
Yeah, so. It's and he's certainly improved his market. We're going to get at least Jake Livermore money for him if we sell him at this point.
I kind of hope we don't. I hope we keep him around.
No, me too. I mean, we're not going to sell him next year. He's going on loan if he ain't on the first team next year. But the thing about Bentaleb that mystifies me is all these Spurs fans calling him like Sherwood's pet and, you know, all these other sort of derisive terms. And I get that, like, there's something to be said for he's probably gotten a crazy amount of starts. For a kid his age with his experience, like Sherwood has started him a lot. And like, I'm not sure why he started a couple of the cup games we've had him in, but like, he's great. Like it's that we've had a 19-year-old come out of our academy who none of us really rated that highly before this season. And he's proven that he's probably a Premier League level player, maybe not Spurs level, but like certainly like we could sell him to a Palace or a Hull City or a, you know, Arsenal.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, regardless of how you feel of Sherwood, and I think Bentaleb is kind of a litmus test of how you think of what you think of Sherwood. You know, regardless of that, we should all be jumping for joy that we have a youth academy product that's playing in the, you know, starting games in the Premier League and playing pretty well. I mean, that's fantastic. A lot of clubs don't even have that. So good for him. I hope he stays around.
Yes, me too. Now, I don't think there's many more positives to dwell on in the Arsenal game. Basically, we lost. We had our best chances at the end. Adebayor had a nice shot in traffic that I thought might sneak in because it looked like Ken Chesney was being blocked pretty well by the scrum, but he made a pretty nice save, actually. But yeah, that sucked. It was awful. I'm happy with the performance. I'm happy what that performance might say about Arsenal going forward. I hope it's predictive and that they are as bad as they looked. They haven't been good in a while now, so that's comforting on some level. But it basically means Spurs season is all but over, and we can only say all but over because we have to go to Portugal this Thursday, and we play Benfica.
Goody. Yeah, Benfica. You know what? That first game at White Hart Lane worried me from the very beginning because Benfica is a good, good team. I think they are a solid team. And, you know, I was feeling pretty pessimistic about it even before the first match. And I was kind of proven right. I mean, we got kind of torn apart. We lost the composure. We lost 3-1 the first leg. And now we have to go to Portugal. And it's not, you know, honestly, the tie's over. I really don't see any way back for us.
What
in this
do we
match.
Need to do? Win 3-0?
We would have to, let's see.
Yeah,
we would have to win 3-0. And I don't see that happening. I mean,
no, I don't. Now, I mean, you know, is this team capable of winning 3-0? Yes. Do I think they will? No. I think we're tired. I don't think Benfica is as good as they look this past week. I think if we played like we played on Sunday, I think we win that game comfortably. But we didn't. And now I think Benfica is good enough to keep us from doing that in Portugal, at least. So, you know, it's possible. I don't have put a lot of credence in it. You know, maybe we'll start Harry Kane up top for – at least we start Harry Kane up top. I thought, oh, Soldado's starting Sunday. And then Soldado's on the bench. And I just – I don't understand why you would start Harry Kane – in the first leg against Benfica, if you're not starting him in the North London Derby. I mean,
Sherwood must have felt really confident about our chances in that first leg. Because, I mean, otherwise, it was a very strong lineup otherwise. But then all of a sudden you've got Harry Kane up top. And look, Kane is – he's fine. You know, he's a serviceable
third striker.
Kane is a
championship-level player.
Yeah, well, okay, fine. But, you know, he's a championship-level player, but he is a serviceable third striker. I suppose if you want to rest your player, you put in Kane for the first match and hope that the rest of your strong team can carry you in for the rest of the game. Didn't happen. I mean, we got pounded. And so it makes the decision even that much more baffling, I think, especially when you don't go out and you don't even play, you know, barely play Soldado, who just broke his duck, you know, the previous week, you know, in the league match. So, I don't get it either. But, you know, honestly, I'm really down on our chances for this Benfica, this return tie in Portugal, because anytime you have to go on the road, we've seen this at the Dnipro, right? Anytime you have to go on the road, it's going to be a tough match. I think, really, honestly, I think the only chance we have of getting of winning the tie would be if, you know, Jan Vertonghen would go out and sucker punch somebody behind the ref's back and get a red card, and then we, you know, I don't see it happening.
I could see that happening. I couldn't see.
Well,
it
I could
winning,
see that.
But, yeah. So I would like one day to see an interview, like alone in a room, the fixed camera on Tim Sherwood explaining his lineup decisions this year. Cause I feel like it would be a lot like Rust Cole being interviewed on True Detective, where he's talking about, you know, like rotation is a flat circle. It all comes back around.
Well, I don't know about you, but I feel like I've been in Carcosa for the past month and a half. So,
Sherwood's been in charge longer than that, pal. So, before we move on, I do think I sort of want to step back and take an evaluation of where we are as a club. I think Spurs fans in general are a little less suicidal after Sunday, considering that we did play really well, even that we lost. But certainly going into Sunday, there was a general mood of among Spurs fans that I would consider similar to, say, passengers on the Titanic in the middle of the night after they'd hit an iceberg. I think things aren't great. Obviously, everything went that we'd planned had gone wrong in a fairly serious way. But for me, when I step back and look at it, this is pretty much where I would have assumed we would be after we parted ways with AVB. Maybe a little higher in the league, honestly, but I thought we would be long shot for Champions League by now, out of our most major cup competitions, depending on how our luck went. But not in any sort of super embarrassing league position. And that's kind of where we are. I mean, honestly, Sherwood was brought in for damage minimalization, as far as I could tell, and get us to the end of the year and keep our options open for the summer. And that's exactly where we are, which is depressing in its own way, but it's not the unmitigated disaster that people seem to be making it out to be.
No, I mean, I think if you look at what's happened to us over the past 3 months, ever since ABB was fired. I mean, God, my gosh, if you would have told me at the beginning of this year that we would have sold Gareth Bale, fired ABB, and have, you know, Tim Sherwood as our coach, and we'd be still in fifth place.
Oh, and Eric Lamella played like slightly more minutes than you and I have.
I mean, it's just the most ridiculous season ever. And yet I think it's helpful to take a step back and look at some take stock a little bit and get some perspective on this season, because I mean, if you look back, the site polled the writers. You remember this? The site polled the writers, and we did our preseason predictions after Bale was sold, and we had most of our players in that we bought in the offseason. And you know, most of us were fairly optimistic. I think only one or two of the writers actually picked Spurs to finish fifth or worse. I had them in fourth. Which seemed reasonable at the time. But honestly, consider all the crap we've had to go through the past few months. We're still sitting in fifth, even with a negative goal differential, for Christ's sake. And this ain't terrible. It's not horrific, the place that we're in at the moment.
It's
not great. Yeah. No, heck no, it's not great. But it sure could be a lot worse. We could be United. You know, we're hanging in there. We're limping along, and we're trying to get to a point where we can get some stability in, with hopefully a new manager looking that way. And I think there are things that are going to shake themselves out in the future that we just don't know about right now. I mean, LaMelo is not going to be injured forever, and he's not going to be playing like crap forever.
Boy, you're optimistic.
I am. I honestly am. I mean, of all the signings we've made over the offseason, I still think Eric LaMelo is the best chance, the one that has the best chance of coming good and coming really good. He had a hard time acclimating, but I mean, you look at players. Look at me. I'm going back to Arsenal. Look at the player like Giroud, who had a terrible year last year and has come back.
He's not having a great year this year.
Well, he's certainly doing better than he did last year. So, I mean, but there are players that take a while to settle down, especially when you're out for so long with injury. This guy's got incredible potential. And I refuse to believe that he's the kind of player that is just going to completely give up, or that we bought a complete donkey when we bought LaMelo. He's 22. He's got bags of talent. He's shown glimpses of it in the few times we've seen him. He's going to have a year to get settled, to learn the language and get familiar with the system. There's a lot of uncertainty with the manager and what style he's going to play, but. If we can get him back on the pitch for the remainder of the year and get him some minutes, get him some time, I still like the guy, and I refuse to admit that we completely struck out with this guy.
Well, the nice thing about LaMelo, unlike say Soldado, who I still hope comes good next year because I think he's had some bad luck or just he's got the yips or something this year, but anyway. Unlike Soldado, it's not like LaMelo had like a large body of work that was terrible this year. He did not play great in his limited chances. I don't know why those chances were limited. I don't know if the rumors that AVB didn't want slash like him are true, or if it was just he wasn't playing well in training, or if it was just who knows. AVB didn't like the way he applied his makeup, but. He didn't play a lot. Like you said, there were glimpses. I think, given that Sherwood put him in the first league game that he could, I think he would have been a lot like Bentaleb. I think Sherwood would have just thrown him in there. But then he got hurt, so whatever. Hopefully he gets right, he gets acclimated. Next year, let's just write this year off as an acclimation period, and hopefully he comes good. He's very good. He's very young. He was better at his age than Gareth Bale was at that age. That's probably not true anymore, but when we got him, it was true. So I hope he comes good. But Tottenham might have things changing on the winger front next year, which lets us take our first trip on the all-new, all-dangerous Wheeler Dealer Radio to Bat Country.
Woo!
We're going to Bat Country because today links were spewing out around Twitter. They were flying. The fur was flying that we have been linked to that winger from Dnipro, that Ukrainian guy. I can't pronounce his name, so I'm going to call him Kony 2012. How would you say his name?
Kony Plyanka.
Kony 2012 it is then. anyway, we are being linked with him, and the quotes from Wande Pro chairman say that we are much further in discussions than Liverpool were with him, and that a contract might happen soon. Now, as soon as we start talking about contracts with Eastern European businessmen, I start to get nervous. But that fact is interesting for a number of reasons. One, that we're being super aggressive when we don't really have a manager in place next year. I guess technically we do, but let's be real, we don't. So Levy's negotiating without a net again. Or Baldini. And two, we're being pretty aggressive with a winger when we've got Townsend, Lennon, and LaMelo on our books. Thoughts?
Couple of thoughts here.
Chadley on the books, too. Sorry,
and Chadley, too. Well, I mean, yeah, the uncertainty of a manager really does come into play here because we don't know who's coming in. One, we don't know if Sherwood is going to be retained. We think he's probably not, but we don't know. So we don't know who's coming in then, and we don't know the style of play that they're going to really want to focus on. So this being Bat Country, and God, I love Bat Country. This is like one of the favorite. Yeah, thank you, Sleeper Sleep, for inventing the term. And God, it's fantastic. So, you know, we don't – there's so much we don't know, which is why this is in the realm of backcountry to begin with, right? Because Konopljanka is a fine player. I mean, he really played, I thought, really well against us in the two ties that we played against him, against the Dnipro.
He had some nice techers on Kyle, too.
Yeah.
On a terrible pitch, by the way.
Absolutely terrible. And, he absolutely torched Kyle Naughton a number of times in that match. And, you know, he's got skills. A little background. This was the guy that we were linked to for a while, but Liverpool was more strongly linked to them, especially. Was it in January? I think it was in January they were linked.
It was in a January window. It looked like Liverpool was going to get him until the last day when it just never sort of advanced. Maybe we jammed their scouts' phones because we tapped them already. So,
well, I mean, obviously we had scouts that were scouting the scouts that were scouting our scouts for Liverpool, right?
It's a flat circle, man.
I tell you what. But Konopljanka, he's a great player. I mean, I like him a lot. I like what I saw out of him. He's got good speed. He's got good width. He's got the ability to get into dangerous positions. I think he'd be an asset to the team. The thing that concerns – let's assume that we do sign this guy. Let's assume that we bring him in. We've got this nice brand new Eastern European wide midfielder. The thing that really that tells me is that we are probably moving on from Aaron Lennon. And I am not sure how I feel about that.
How you feel about that because I feel the same way. So let me tell you how you feel about that.
You tell me how I feel about that.
I will tell you how I feel because that's what I do. I tell people how to think. You feel sad that we're letting go of Aaron Lennon because Aaron Lennon has done a lot for this club, as the intro to this show would remind you. But at the same time, you will also know that Aaron Lennon hasn't been good for about a season now, probably since he pulled his hammy against Inter last year, when he was having a very good season before that. And Aaron Lennon, despite only being 26, has a lot of miles on those tires. So my guess is between Chadley, Townsend, Lamella, and maybe this guy, you are sad but fine with letting Aaron Lennon go.
Oh, you nailed it in one.
Yes, I'm the man. I did it. I did it.
Oh, man. Aaron Lennon, I love him to death, and I will be very sad when he leaves. But I, honestly, after this season, he's been terrible, bad, just awful. And I hate to say it because I love the guy to death. He's Tottenham through and through, and he's been around. He's been one of the longest tenured players in the club. But
I mean, maybe
if he needs to pull it together or he needs to go, and it really saddens me to say that, but he's not providing the same kind of dynamic spark that he had shown in the previous few years for us. And if he can't do that, then he needs to go to a place where maybe he can resurrect his career, because I don't see a future for him at Tottenham Hotspur, and it saddens me to say it.
Yeah. I mean, Lennon's always been kind of he's not a one trick pony, but he's close to it. And it's just, like I said, the degradation. I thought he was declining a little bit before under Redknapp, actually, until, surprisingly, he did really well under AVB last year, which I did not see happening at all. But then he got hurt, and it's like he's never sort of recaptured that form, despite a fair amount of starts. And I don't know. It's I would be... If Lennon's sort of willing to take a reduced role on the team, sort of a specialist sub or start position, like, you know, I'd be fine with that. I don't mind keeping him around. But it's kind of like Michael Dawson, where, like, he plays well enough just often enough where you can't just be like, screw it, get him out of here. But you probably know in your heart of hearts that it's past time for him to go, or at least not be the starter.
Yeah, if Aaron Lennon were 32 right now, I would say, you know, it would be an easier decision for me because he'd be the kind of player that'd be kind of past his prime. And
Feels like he's 32, doesn't it?
He's been
like
around for so long. You know, he's been like a fixture. He was one of the first players I recognized when I started following Tottenham Hotspur. Well, this is back in 2005. I think he was still there in 2005.
Playing for Leeds takes years off your life, man.
Clearly. You know, so But he's only – is he 26 or 27? I can't remember.
I mean, he's about – my point is he's much younger than I sort of – I always think he's around 30, and he's not.
Yeah.
It just feels like – maybe because he gets hurt so much, but it just feels like he's got a lot less tread on the tires than he probably does. I don't know. Like, I'm fine with – the problem with Lennon is he doesn't score, or at least not often. And he doesn't he puts in defensive work rate. He's fast, but – I don't feel like he's cultured enough to get to, like, sort of hang with some of the more talented backs in the league. I don't know. It's – I hate to say it, but I'd take him – I'd take Coney 2012 over Lennon at this point. But
yeah, I would too. And it saddens me to say it. But, I mean, Connor Pleyanka has played well. The times that I've watched him, he's been a really dynamic attacking force, and that's kind of what we need. He also provides a lot of width and a lot of an offensive prowess. And, you know, if you're looking at the team right now and you bring in Connor Pleyanka and you think, who am I going to replace him with? Or who am I going to replace on the team?
That's a tricky question because it depends on where you play them. Because, like, I think Townsend's been good enough to play on the left. And then who goes on the right? I mean, you've got Chadley and then you've got Lamella. Lamella, both those guys, you can play in the middle, but why would you play them as a number 10 when you've got Eriksson on your team, who could be one of the best number 10s in the world?
Well, unless you're playing a 4-3-3 and you move Eriksson back at the center along with Tom Carroll and Sandro and or Dembele. But that's going a little bit far afield from the point here. Your point is valid because now we've got this abundance of left backs. And if we add Connor Pleyanka – or not left backs, left wingers. And if we add Connor Pleyanka, then, you know, we're adding one more horse to the stable. But the one of the weaknesses that we have in the team right now is a solid right winger that really can provide that kind of width. Assuming that's what we want our new coach to be able to do, is provide width on that right wing.
God only knows. I would assume that Levy's got either an in or a deal going with this guy, and that's why we're pursuing it so hard. If only to keep him out of Liverpool. I'm fine with that.
God only hopes we can keep him out of Liverpool, because the last thing Liverpool needs is more offensive weaponry, right?
Ugh. Well, but, you know, whatever. If we're going after him, he seems talented enough that I'm excited to get another guy. I mean, at this point, I'm just excited for transfer rumors. So.
Totally. And it's going to be a long, slow summer, because I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of action in the transfer rumor market or in backcountry until – well, we're going to see a lot of rumor in backcountry, but we're not going to see a whole lot of actual substantive transfer rumors until after the World Cup, because I think that's really when I think the coaching search is probably going to heat up. There's a chance, I think, that we might – if Sherwood is not retained, which is still an if at this point.
It better not be an if at this point.
But, I mean, we don't really know that Sherwood is not going to be retained after this year, so we have to kind of hedge our bets. But we all think he's probably not going to be around after April or after May. But really, it's going to kind of suck, I think, this summer, watching, because there are going to be a lot of EPL teams that are going to be making all kinds of splashy moves and making all kinds of cool signings. And we're going to be left behind probably until we get our coach figured out. And that's probably not going to happen until after the World Cup is over.
Well, that's a whole other thing. If we get Van Hall, you're probably right. Although I could see us agreeing to something before the World Cup and him sending his, like, appointing a number two to sort of get things started. But who knows? Maybe for that specific reason we don't do that and we go for a De Boer, Prandelli, Spalletti, or, you know, whoever, Bob Bradley.
Let's go for Capello.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's not do that.
Let's not do that at all.
So, yeah, so before we go, I think we've covered a lot so far. Let's delve into the mailbag and see what the commentary at its finest has to offer us.
Ooh, the mailbag. Let's see what we have.
Yeah, Negative Shane asks, when is Brian A. coming back on the podcast? We have a strict no Brian policy, so probably not for a while.
Yeah, he's busy with law school, and frankly, he doesn't add much to the pod, so I think we'll just keep it kind of in-house, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I didn't say that, Brian.
I love you, Brian.
We don't answer questions from Arsenal fans, so I'll keep moving on. She Blinded Me With Violence wants to know if a jump from that height would kill him. I'm going to go with yes.
I think I would also go with yes.
See, there's not enough disagreement on this podcast.
Yeah, don't do it, man.
Well, we do have 10 weeks of Sherwood left, so go for it. See what happens. Let's see. Oakland Zoo 12 asks, what are Spurs missing? Players, better tactics, new managers, team cohesiveness, or chemistry? What do you think?
You know, I think the answer is yes. this actually brings up a really interesting point because this kind of cuts to the heart of, you know, what the hell's been wrong with our team for the past year. I tend to lean toward the perspective that says that we have pretty decent players, and what's keeping us back is a manager with the tactical nous to actually get the best out of our players. Now, I think you can make a strong argument that we bought a couple of lemons in the off season, and that we aren't as good. Maybe we're just a team full of crappy players. I happen to think if we get the right system in for the players that we have, I think we could be a really, really good team. But there's an argument to be made on both sides, and you probably have a different opinion than what I do on that.
I think the answer is I would say yes, but for different reasons. I think what happened is, because everyone moans about, Spurs don't have a plan. Why aren't they sticking to a long-term plan? We did have a plan. We hired a coach, and it turned out that coach sucked. So we had to fire him mid-season, because if I was a betting man, I'd say he set all his bridges on fire behind the scenes and forced us to fire him. Now we've got an interim guy in charge, and we're going to come up with a new plan in the summer when we can hire a dude long-term. We probably need some players. We probably need the right manager who can implement tactics. But when you're looking down to lack of cohesiveness and lack of movement and all this other stuff, it comes down to they implemented something over the summer, it didn't work, and Sherwood's trying to keep it all together with duct tape and, you know, spit. So, and he's probably not talented enough to do that. So that's, you know, that's what I would think. It's all down to planning something. It doesn't have to be 100% right in the summer, but it, like, kind of has to be right this summer.
Yeah, this summer's pretty pivotal, I think. Because a lot of it's going to depend on, again, if we bring in a new coach, what is the kind of tactics that they're going to bring in? I, honestly, as bad as Paulinho has been this year, and yes, I am going to call him the Brazilian Jermaine Genius, because he really has been the Brazilian Jermaine Genius, and I'm not going to apologize for that.
That's rough, man. That is some rough shit.
He's supposed to be good. He was supposed to unite the team, not divide it.
That's cold, man. That's cold.
You know, look, I mean, when you spend £100 million on new players, not all of them are going to work out, and that's fine. You're not going to hit the lottery on every time you bring in a new player, and that I get that. Not all of them are going to be Gareth Bale, but. You know, the people that we did spend money on, they haven't panned out for whatever reason. And it comes down to this really is another litmus test of what you think about Spurs season. Do we have the players and we just haven't had the coach to get the most out of them? Or have we just bought crappy players and, no coach is going to be able to get the results out until we get – you know, the lemons out and good players in. I don't have the answer. I'd like to think that we have good players and that we have to get a system in that'll unlock their potential, but that's totally pie in the sky bullshit, and I can't justify it with anything rational, so I'm just going to kind of go with my gut on that one.
So our next question comes from Bricks, who must want to hear some of her thoughts expressed on a podcast and has no other venue. If we had to marry one Arsenal player, who would it be and why? I would marry Kenny Chesney so I could kill him in a crime of passion and not go to jail for it. Because I fucking hate that guy's face. Like, I would – oh, God. He's like that one guy. I would run him over, back up, and, like, not call the cops about it. I fucking hate him. I hate his punchable, stupid face and his stupid pouting. Oh, God, I hate that asshole.
Okay, so are we restricting this answer to are we restricting this the scope of this question to current Arsenal players or
current
are
Arsenal players? Don't put current Arsenal players.
Okay, because I was totally going to go for someone like
Go whoever you want. This is there's no good answer to this question. So let's just
oh God, no,
with it.
There is no good answer to this question. I think maybe
why would you want to marry a squatter? I mean.
Yeah, maybe Olivier Giroud, not because he's particularly good or because he's particularly attractive, because he's French and maybe I'd like to live in Paris someday. I don't know.
Oh,
this is
weak.
A terrible question.
Weak.
Let's move on.
All right, weak. Bum, bum, bum. Let's see. If Pinocchio said, "My nose will now grow," what would happen next? Sherwood would play a 4-4-2.
Absolutely.
That's what would happen next.
Clearly. Let's move on.
What would Tim Sherwood's spirit animal be from Willman?
Oh, this is good. This is good. Tim Sherwood's spirit animal. I think it would probably be what's something that falls down a ladder, doesn't move? Probably a sloth.
No.
I'm going to go with a sloth.
It would be a seal because it falls over and then it hits balls at people.
I can't top that. Yeah, that's perfect.
Let's see. Andre Villas-Boas asks, take me back? ? No.
God, no. No.
I would like to actually address this in a slightly more substantive manner. There's a lot of people online doing the sort of I told you so thing with AVB. Now, I think it's certainly a reasonable position to say we should have kept – if we were going to do this year, we should have just kept Villas-Boas till the end of the year and fired him at the end of the season.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable,
yes.
That perfectly reasonable position to take, yeah.
But much like AVB being bad doesn't make firing Harry Redknapp a mistake, Sherwood being bad doesn't necessarily make firing AVB a mistake. The thing to remember with AVB, first of all, we don't know why he was fired. I don't think Levy's the kind of guy who fires someone for two bad results, or three. I guess it would have been. Because it would have been Liverpool, City, and West Ham at that point.
Now, granted, they were pretty bad results.
They were really bad results. But Levy's not a guy who generally, like, I mean, we're not Cardiff or, like, West Ham. Like, we generally don't fire a guy because he had three bad results. I think there is more going on there. Again, I think it's AVB's fault, given some of the stuff that was poking around in the ITK sphere. But regardless of that, the thing to remember is everyone's like, oh, things would have been better under AVB. Maybe. I don't know. Given how the season was going, I'm skeptical of that. But the thing to remember is, let's assume things kept going the way they've been going under AVB, which is probably the way they went under Sherwood, but slightly more dull. think of, like, all the gnashing of teeth that's going on with, say, Moyes right now. Now, imagine that with the way the press treated AVB. Like, things wouldn't necessarily be better right now. All this, like, oh, I want my Tottenham back. Like, yeah, it probably would be just as bad right now, but in a longer, more grueling, disappointing way. Maybe we all would have rallied around AVB because Neil Ashton would have written some horribly racist columns about him. I don't know.
God. Okay. Now, there's a couple of things you can look at. You can look at this particular issue. For starters, you can make the argument that it really didn't make a whole lot of sense to fire AVB when we did. And I think that's a pretty strong argument because there's, and at least back at the point that you mentioned that there's probably stuff going on that we had no idea what was going on. Someday someone's going to write a book about AVB's tenure at Spurs. Now, I'm going to be the first one in line to buy that book because I want to know what was going on in that club that led to him leaving the way that he did. But regardless, something happened, and something led to AVB either being fired or leaving for whatever reason. Sherwood was brought in as a stabilizing influence to try to get us through the end of the season. I kind of lost my plot with my train of thought with this comment, but I don't think that AVB would have been any better at Tottenham Hotspur now than Sherwood is now either. We were predicted to be in striking distance of top four, and we we were until last week, and now we're not, and it sucks, but we're still top five at the moment. We are not – it feels like a dumpster fire, but it's really not completely a dumpster fire.
We're not Aston Villa.
No, we're not Aston Villa. We're not even Everton, which is relying on a number of loan players to get to where they are at the moment. Take away De La Feu and Lukaku, and where would they be at the moment? So I don't know. ABB was not good. He had a plan. It was working decently well. And then Newcastle happened. Michael Cayley wrote a really good article about this. His thesis is that, you know, we had this high line and the pressing, and it was working decently well. And then the Newcastle game happened, Tim Krul played like Spider-Man and kept us all out. And then for whatever reason, we abandoned the high line and all went to shit after that.
Well, this goes back to my theory. I don't think Andre Villas-Boas is capable of dealing with adversity.
I think you're right.
I think as soon as any kind of adversity on the pitch or in the locker room comes about up, I just think he falls apart, doesn't know how to deal with it, just gets resentful that he has to deal with it. I don't think he deals with it very well. And, you know, I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt at Chelsea because Chelsea's Chelsea. But like the evidence is such for me right now, I don't think he knows how to deal with it at all.
No, I agree. My opinion at the time when he was fired was that I thought it was premature to fire him. We don't know what happened beyond the scenes, so probably there was a pretty good reason why he was let go or why he left the club. It probably would have been better for the club's overall fortunes to keep some continuity until the end of the season and not kind of go through this tire fire that we've been going through at the moment. But, you know, we are where we are. And the best thing we can do is try to limp to the end of the season and regroup and try to come back better and stronger and, you know, faster than what we have been. So I don't have any good answers to that. But, I mean, this season sucks, and I'm ready to hit the reset button, and I want to get to the next August so that I can actually have hope again.
Basically, yes. I would like to delude myself over the summer once again. It's always a nice experience that every football team's fans get to do. Let's find one final question.
Do I like Rosicki's hair?
Don't give her two questions.
Good Lord.
Don't give her two questions. Oh, my God. Inexcusable. Inexcusable.
Well, okay. She did write, 15 questions.
Yeah, and they're all awful. So, okay. Yeah. Here's one from Reno Wallabout. What the fuck is a gilet? Is that how you say it? The thing Sherwood wears on the sidelines.
The only thing I know that looks looks approximately like that is a razor, which I don't even use. So I don't know.
It's a vest. I don't know. I think it's the cause of all our troubles. I feel like we were winning games until Sherwood put that thing on.
You know what? If Sherwood were wearing ABB side buckle, I think we'd be probably, you know, in the top two or three at the moment. So I blame it. The whole season is a big fashion miscommunication, and I think it's terrible.
Yes, I think our manager next year should wear a tracksuit over an actual suit. So he's got flexibility within the game as it requires. Yes, anyway, that was a fun way to end it. So yes, that is another fun-filled edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio. I look forward to next week. We're playing Southampton. What do you think we're going to do against Saints real quick?
Well, we're playing Saints at home. We played them well on the road. They're a team that started off really well, looked like they were going to make some noise and possibly challenge for a Europa League spot. But they've kind of trailed off here in the last few weeks. They are dangerous. I think they're a team that we don't want to overlook for sure. But I still think if we play the way that we did against Arsenal, I think we should beat them fairly comfortably at home.
I'm curious. I would like to see us play the way we played against Arsenal against Benfica and Saints. I'm not sure if it'll be enough to beat Benfica by the margin we need to beat them by. But, you know, I would like to see us play that way against someone who's not our biggest rival.
Well, I think the big question here from here on out, now that the season is essentially over and that we're not going to get top four and we're not going to get the Europa League, is motivation. What's going to happen from here on out? If we can keep motivation going, then I think, you know, we could probably have a pretty good showing against Southampton. But, you know, there's not a whole lot to play for from here on out. So unless we really, really want to get that fifth place and get Europa League again.
Which we will, because at the end of the day, we're still not Aston Villa. On that note, I will end it. Meno, thank you for joining us tonight. I hope to have you back soon.
I had a lot of fun.
By us, I mean me.
I'm hoping to be back so that Lennon's eyebrow can tell me how much I suck, because that's always fun.
Well, that's always good for, really. That and cigarettes, apparently. Sorry we didn't have any smoking on tonight's edition, all you ex-smokers in the podcast listening audience. But we'll try to bring that back next week. Anyway, for Uncle Meno, I am Skipjack. This has been another edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio. Have a terrific week.